very good day to you all, and welcome back to Marker's Eye on La Liga. I am your host, Ollie Wilson. Joining me, as always, two of the finest minds that Marker has to offer. First on the microphone today, he may be Scottish, but there's nothing miserable about this man when it comes to Spanish football at the moment. Ewan McTeer joining us on the line. Ewan, how are you doing, mate?
Yeah, good. I don't think I've ever been miserable.
It's just the sound that naturally comes.
Yeah, it's just the nasal tones.
Well, a very happy man at the moment, considering your Ivar side are flying in the form table and sat in the Europa League spots at the moment. We'll dive into them a little later on. Joining Ewan on the show today, a man that really needs no introduction. He's come in the second half of the season on the Marker's Eye on La Liga podcast and really taking it by storm. Mr. Simon Harrison joining us on the line. Simon, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, not too bad. Nice to have a little international break of our own and now get back into what should be a pretty interesting last few weeks of the season.
Well, I'll refrain from using any Grand National puns because obviously we had the Grand National in the United Kingdom this weekend. Anything about final furlongs and falling at the last fences or anything like that. But we will be diving into everything that is the La Liga title race after a massive weekend that changes the face of it once again. And once more, we're saying, is the La Liga title race done and dusted and over as Barcelona lose to Malaga? 10-man Barcelona, of course, leaving themselves 3 points adrift with Real Madrid with that game in hand as well. We're going to be looking around the league elsewhere at Celta Vigo, at Valencia, and of course we'll be looking ahead to the Champions League games coming up as well for Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid, and of course Barcelona, all involved in the quarter-final stage. But let's kick things off with the Catalan club domestically and a disastrous weekend's result with the 2-0 loss against Malaga. Gentlemen, there's been a lot of finger-pointing in the last 24 hours or so about who is to blame for the result on the weekend, and in general, what's happened to Barcelona's title ambitions. And some people even saying now that Barcelona aren't too fussed about the La Liga title race and they want the Champions League more. I'm not sure if that's a deflection tactic or not from Barca fans and pro-Barca writers. But I'll start with you, Ewan. What happened on Saturday against Malaga?
Well, they didn't have Gerard Piqué. I think that's what happened. I mean, a lot of the finger-pointing has been going in Jeremy Mathieu's direction, but I mean, I don't really know why anybody was too surprised to see him make, you know, a couple of errors, because that's just his level. And they didn't have Gerard Piqué, got suspended midweek in the Sevilla game, as did Ivan Rakitic, who they also missed to a lesser extent. And that's kind of what cost him in the first game against Malaga at the Camp Nou. Luis Suarez had picked up one of these yellow card suspensions that he was sort of seemed to be looking for, because he'd rather miss the Malaga game than the Real Sociedad one the next week. And I don't think Piqué's in midweek was one of these ones, but they definitely missed another key player against Malaga. And yeah, it cost them once again. I mean, they were a bit all over the place in defence. And then obviously they didn't score as well, but part of that must just be because of Neymar's red card.
Let's talk about the red card, the two yellows that Neymar got. And there's a number of people, Simon, that are saying that Neymar shouldn't have been booked for merely tying his shoelace. We were chatting just for a few seconds off air about this, and I think I voiced my opinion on this quite loudly and clearly, as I have opinions and I want everybody to hear them as loudly as possible. But what about yourself on the two yellows for Neymar? Deserved, or is the outcry from Barcelona fans and the players and staff as well? I guess, is there some sort of conclusion that they might be right with their protests about the sending off?
Well, I mean, the first one, I think it's a bit more open to interpretation, obviously. What he's doing is quite, you know, almost seems a bit innocent, but at the same time, there's a whole lot of turf to tie your laces on, and if you're going to be choosing the square directly in front of the ball when a free kick's going to be taken, you're kind of just asking to get into a bit of trouble that you don't need to really be in. I'm sure that if he would have been tying his laces and not really being in a position where he looked to be obstructing the play, the referee probably would have just like said to the player taking the free kick, like, just give it like 1 second and then let play continue. But then the second one, I mean, it's just complete idiocy, really. It's a shame, because he's been one of the players to really put Barcelona on his back and to really show that he can probably be like one of the better players in the world in, you know, the whole post-Messi, post-Cristiano Ronaldo era. And for him to go flying into that tackle for the second yellow card, it really doesn't fill you with belief that he should be the man that Barcelona can 100% depend on week in, week out, because he's got this little streak in him, and you saw it at Granada when there were clashes in the tunnel. And of course, yes, he is the player who is probably fouled the most per minute in the league this season. It's just the way that he plays. But you're giving the opposition a tactic which is just outside of how they play in terms of formation and structure and system. You're just giving them a little way to wind up one of the better players in the world. And it's really going to be a flaw in his game if it keeps coming out in these big moments.
I mean, he's 25 years old, Neymar, and as you mentioned there, Simon, he does have this irrational and immature tendency sometimes to just, I guess, see red at points, as some of the greatest players on the planet do. I mean, alongside him is Luis Suarez, and his moments of seeing red are well documented every few years or so. But for Neymar, who's been put on such a pedestal and had to mature kind of almost unfairly very quickly in his career to deal with the pressures that have come with him both domestically and as a leader of the Brazil side as they look for a new talisman, if you will, and he had to take that mantle on pretty much since the age of around about 19-20. But to have this streak in him then shows, I think, at 25 years of age that he's actually still got a fair bit of growing up to do before we can really put him on that same pedestal that Messi and Ronaldo had. It took a while for Ronaldo to get that petulance out of his game. Messi hasn't had it as much, although there's every so often there's a little bit of feistiness in the Argentinian, as all good players have. But I think Neymar really still needs to work on that mentality on the pitch at points. And then when you combine that with the first yellow card that he got on the weekend, which for me is the most petulant way to get a yellow card. I'm tired all the time in world football of a free kick about to be taken and an opposition player will go stand in front of it and then start walking back. It prevents a quick free kick being taken, but it's against the rules because you're meant to be 10 yards away. You can't just stick yourself a yard in front of the ball and then work backwards 10 yards. The players have got every right to try and take a free kick early, and that should be a booking. And I think Neymar, in the same way, tying his shoelaces up, firstly tie your shoelaces up before you go out on the pitch. Let's not even pretend that shouldn't be happening. And secondly, if you're going to have to do it, step away. It's the same as players when they get injured on the touchline and not rolling off the pitch to allow the game to continue. It's just frustrating. It slows the game down. And it's an annoyance to the opposition player, fans, and I think the neutral supporter as well. So for Barca fans to say he got yellow carded for tying his shoelaces, I think is an incorrect statement for them to make. And actually, it's just another sign of Neymar still got a fair bit growing up to do.
Yeah, I think you're dead right that he's so close to being, you know, the next world superstar, but yeah, he does have this sort of mean streak every now and then. But at the same time, I guess we should give him credit that this was his first Barcelona red card, and he has been there since 2013. But then he got three red cards with Santos, and he's had one with Brazil. So yeah, he definitely has that mean streak in him, but I guess he has generally been able to keep it intact with Barcelona. And yeah, almost like you pointed out, you kind of need a little bit of feistiness if you're going to be one of the best players in the world. And we've seen kind of a similar evolution with Ronaldo, where he has been able to cut it out almost entirely. But even in the last few years, there have been a few incidents where he'll have shoved a player or kicked a player, just seeing that moment of red. So I don't think Neymar will ever completely cut it out, and I don't think we can really expect him to either. But what I think, if I was a Barcelona fan, I'd be most disappointed with was the way he came off the pitch and then applauded the fourth official, because by that point the decision's made, you can't change anything, and by doing that you're only going to make it worse, as he might well have done with putting his place in the Clásico at risk.
I was going to say, that's the other point to come on to, is that perhaps facing a retrospective ban of Miss El Clásico, which is really the last chance you feel that Barca have of being able to pull themselves back into this title race, and hoping, of course, that Real Madrid slip up elsewhere in their final running. It's just another frustrating, niggly thing that continues to pick at Barcelona's season, but losing Neymar in El Clásico would be massive. What's the likelihood, Simon, of him facing retrospective action for that?
Well, I mean, I think you, objectively, it's definitely got to be looked into. Officials should be treated with the right kind of respect, and
And at the end of the day, both of the yellow cards he's received are entirely down to him. If he's blaming either officials or the opposition bench for, you know, aiding the process of sort of like winding him up and frustrating him, that's entirely down to what he makes of it is entirely down to him, essentially. He can kind of just brush it off, and obviously it's easier said than done when players or frustration can get the better of you. But you just can't really react like that, and I don't think that it would be too unlikely for him to face some kind of ban or fine. He has got previous for doing things off the pitch after games. The Granada one is the one that stands out to me, and I don't really think that he can complain if something like that does fall on his doorstep in the next few days or week or so.
What about the blame falling on Luis Enrique once again with this policy of rotation in his squad, if you will, and switching around this formation? Some people have said that the formation on the weekend was a 4-3-3. Others have said it's 3-4-3. There still seems to be a little bit of confusion over the decision-making that Luis Enrique has. And now he's almost playing without managing without any real fear of consequences, because he knows and he's said that he's going at the end of the season regardless of what happens.
Yeah, it is true, though, that Barcelona only had 16 first-team players this week, given the suspensions and the injuries to Rafinha now, in addition to Vidal and Thuram still out. And Iniesta just seems at this kind of point in the season that he can't really do three games a week. So I guess it made sense that Iniesta had to sit this one out for the Juventus game in midweek. So once you take Iniesta, Piqué, Rakitic and all the injured players out, I guess this was almost the best team he could have played, more or less. So it was maybe a case of, you know, slightly rotating, but also I think the squad was just a little bit stretched for this one.
What, just finally on Barcelona, gentlemen, do you make about the comments from Iniesta saying that Barca kind of must turn the page now, thinking only about the Champions League? But the comments that he's made seem to almost reflects a broader sense in terms of there now has to be a slight change in almost philosophy at the club. Has this season been a bit of a shock and will require a bit of a reshuffle in terms of the policies that Barcelona adopt going forward, both managerially, strategically, and perhaps with signings as well?
I think they probably do need a bit of a breath of fresh air in terms of a manager coming in, whether it's the right idea to keep it organic and keep the next appointment in-house. I would suggest they need someone with a bit more of a personality, a bit more of an aura about them, to really bring in like a new era of something a bit different, because I think things have gone a slight bit stale this season. And also with the signings from last summer, Umtiti, obviously, he was brilliant on the weekend, I thought, kind of doing it all on his own in terms of playing with Jeremy Mathieu. And the rest of the signings, they just haven't really stepped up to the plate. And we'll see whether it's a case of this season they're settling in and next season they'll make more of an impact. But I would definitely say they do need a few more players who will make an immediate impact, because last season's policy of signing some squad depth, it hasn't really worked out, because there are some obvious problem areas in the preferred sort of starting 11 that you might go with. So the first thing I'd say, they've got to decide, you know, whether there's going to be any legs in this 3-4-3, which personally I don't think there will be. I think it'll probably be a 4-3-3 next season. But I would definitely be behind the idea of bringing in someone from outside the club to, you know, breathe a bit of fresh air in and to help them turn the page, as Iniesta has said.
Well, Barcelona will have all of their focus on the Champions League this midweek, and we'll come on to that in a little bit on the podcast. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to look at the Madrid derby from Saturday. Griezmann with the strike, pulling Atletico Madrid level late on, but they still have the advantage, Los Blancos, in the title race, thanks to Barcelona's slip-up and picking up a win in midweek as well. More on the Madrid side when we come back. Podcast, don't forget, on Twitter @MarketInEnglish, @MarketInEnglish for all the latest breaking news from around the world of Spanish football. Gents, we had the Masters this weekend, and the man that picked up the green jacket at Augusta was Sergio Garcia, the Spaniard, and of course Marca.com is celebrating his fantastic accomplishment this week. Sergio was a man who was renowned at the majors for slipping up just at the final moments and perhaps not being able to finally find a finish, which he did against Justin Rose in their playoff. My question to start with the Real the Madrid sides, and particularly with Real Madrid then, are they capable of pulling a Sergio Garcia, or what would have been known as a Sergio Garcia, and falling late on in this title race? They slipped up right at the end against Atletico Madrid in the Madrid derby on the weekend. Is that any foreshadowing at all that perhaps this fallible Los Blancos side that we've seen slip up on a number of occasions this season already at big points perhaps could just still fall short and allow Barcelona back into this title race that they seem to have complete control of?
I like how we're not doing Grand National analogies, but we can go right into the golf.
It's a Spanish thing.
It's a good one. I like it. I do like it. I think maybe this is then Real Madrid's Sergio Garcia season where they look like they have it in them to slip up, but then they finally don't. I think we saw at the Madrid derby that when Griezmann scored that equaliser, there was almost a... Everybody seemed to view that as 2 points dropped, but I think any point gained against Atletico Madrid, especially when you're Real Madrid and the derby factor plays a role, is a point gained, I think. And I think that was apparent after, obviously, the Barcelona result. But even if Barcelona had won, I think this was a point gain for Real Madrid. Obviously, they had the victory in their hands until the final 5 minutes. But they'd lost this fixture the last three seasons. So I think to get a point against a Diego Simeone side is always a benefit. And yeah, it was an interesting derby. I think this one seemed like one of the least tense Madrid derbies I've seen in the past few years, because I guess Atletico are so far out of the title race that this was almost like a bonus game for them. They've also claimed back third, so they didn't really need the points. And for Real Madrid, it would have been massive if they could win. That draw was also good. It seemed just a little bit calmer and a bit more fun than some of the more cagey encounters they've had in recent years, such as, you know, the Champions League finals.
A jovial Madrid derby, almost.
Almost. In the sun and everybody happy. Yeah, it was nice.
Do you think that affects it? The fact it was the mid-afternoon kickoff rather than under the floodlights. I always find that, you know, a big derby game just loses a bit of tension when it's put on either early on a Saturday or Sunday or isn't. You know, you want to see those big games under the floodlights of, say, like a Monday night or the last game on a Sunday or a Saturday, the 8:30 kickoff Spanish time. And I just think that just takes some of the edge out of it. Everybody's almost kind of still getting into their day a bit by the time kickoff gets going, and it's... there's no real feistiness and sharpness and edge to the game.
Well, I think if you were to say that floodlights can affect how much passion Diego Simeone has for a match, I think his reaction at the final whistle kind of said it all. He just went crazy for a few seconds and then sprinted down the tunnel. But, I mean, I don't know. I thought, as Ewan said, it didn't quite have that same edge and bite to it. But at the same time, I think that was kind of down to the refereeing. I thought the referee was very good. He let quite a lot of things slide. He wasn't getting his cards out straight away. But I think if it was refereed a little bit differently, it really could have boiled over. I think there were some times where the Real Madrid players were really coming over to the referee, putting pressure on him, surrounding him. But he kind of dealt with the occasion well, I thought. Quite a young referee at 31. And for a season where we've spent so long talking about the refereeing decisions and what went right, what went wrong, I mean, in Real Betis against Las Palmas on the late kickoff on Sunday night, I mean, there was so much wrong in that game. And it was just nice to have a game where there wasn't that kind of controversy, and it was just about the football. And hopefully we'll see a bit more of that in the coming weeks, but I won't hold my breath.
Yeah, I think the Liga Refereeing Association are probably quite happy. Everything kind of went smoothly, considering all of the discussion around refereeing decisions that we've had on the podcast. And as we mentioned in part one with the Barcelona decision of Neymar being sent off, that probably continues slightly as the finger pointing from the Catalan club will continue. Talking about Real Madrid, though, and their form right now, before we get on to Atleti, they've just lost just once since the back end of January after the loss against Sevilla they've really kind of kicked on, apart from that defeat away at Valencia, who are a side that, I mean, we've said time and time again, we don't know whether we're going to see a Europa League-looking side or a relegation-threatened-looking side every time they step out under Voro, or they seem to be getting things right at the moment. They've got a relatively comfortable run-in after El Clásico with Deportivo revenge tie against Valencia, which you'd expect them to win on home soil. The only other slip-up could be Sevilla. In terms of them holding their grit, there's always trouble around this Real Madrid side, ever since pretty much Mourinho took control, about a little bit of divisiveness in the dressing room. We're hearing that Morata's unhappy with a lack of playing time, and obviously the BBC will be the main threat for Real Madrid on all fronts now as they look for a Champions League trophy as well. There's James Rodriguez is in the news for falling out with Zidane, which really isn't news, considering James is always in the news for not playing and always being perhaps a bit of a problem behind the scenes in the last 18 months or so. Is there enough to unsettle them internally as well as on the pitch in terms of the Sevilla game coming up at the back of, well, I think it's the second to last game of the season, of course, El Clasico as well on the horizon? Or has this team actually got a little more mental fortitude in terms of its chemistry than the Spanish press is sometimes letting us see?
Yeah, I don't think it's maybe quite as big an issue as when you had Mourinho. That having Zinedine Zidane there is, it seems to just be a calming influence. I think having been there, having been in a team, you know, full of superstars, having been the player that was, you know, sometimes struggling to get, you know, the positions he wanted to play when he first arrived, and then being the one that was, you know, every week the first name on the team sheet, he knows all the sides of this, and I think he can manage it quite well. The only thing I think would be a problem with the BBC starting every game wouldn't be that Morata becomes unhappy, but would maybe be that that isn't actually the best option. They were almost invisible in the Madrid derby. I don't think any of the front three had a great game. Ronaldo had a couple of efforts on goal, but generally he was quite quiet. Bale was very quiet. Benzema was, you know, he kind of held the ball up a couple of times, but there wasn't really much going on around him. And it said a lot that, again, they had to rely on a set-piece goal. Pepe coming back, he kind of, almost like a Hollywood hero, he just kind of stepped in, shot, scored, and then just walked out again after picking up his injury. It was, there wasn't much going for the BBC in that game. And that could maybe be the problem going forward, is that I don't think Ronaldo, Benzema or Bale are in particularly good form.
Well, that and losing Pepe as well for around about a month or so with the two broken ribs, as you mentioned there, Ewan. I mean, centre-back has been a position this season where Madrid have struggled with injuries, in particular Pepe. Unfortunately for him, popped up with the goal, as you say, in the Madrid derby. But he's going to be a big loss for the month or so, and a big month as well in terms of the Champions League too. Just more instability with that back four, and particularly the centre-back pairings. But Madrid have now coped with that enough this season that you imagine that it shouldn't be as big as a problem as it potentially could be.
Well, I mean, the big difference in the derby I found was in the first half. I actually wrote about this in a piece this week for Marca. But I think it was around, it was probably in the first half, there was an instance where Sergio Ramos gave the ball away. Griezmann was put through on goal, and it was Pepe that was coming across that showed Griezmann wide a little bit. He did well to, you know, force the angle a bit wider. Griezmann still got a shot in, but it was within Navas's reach. And then in the last 5 minutes, it was a similar sort of thing. It was a good through ball from Correa, but Nacho's positioning just wasn't there. I mean, I don't know whether it comes down to Nacho coming off the bench, you know, in a big game, having to settle down quite quickly. And I think after Toni Kroos went off as well, a lot of belief drained out of Real Madrid. But it's definitely not an ideal situation to be going into, for one, the Champions League this week without either Varane or Pepe. Nacho, he's been quite good this season. He's been a bit of a utility man, obviously, at left-back and at centre-half. But it really is a big, big miss. And with Sergio Ramos, he's been scoring these important goals with his head, but at the back, he's not afraid to, you know, make these rash challenges. He's made mistakes this season. He made some mistakes at the weekend. And really, I think the biggest talking point that has come out of the Madrid derby is the injury to Pepe. I really don't know if they're going to be able to cover for him And also, when you look at the fixtures that they've got left, they've got to go away to Granada. Granada have been quite good at home this season. They've got Sevilla, who, I mean, if the links to Sampaoli and the Barcelona job are still got something in them, you're looking at maybe Sevilla will be wanting to go to the Bernabeu and take some points off them to maybe win a bit of favour with Barcelona. They've also got to play Valencia. It's never been an easy game. And they've also got to go away to Malaga, which is obviously something that Barcelona struggled with. Maybe Michel is managing to turn things around there a little bit. They can play to frustrate. I mean, it's one of those where obviously they've got that gap. They've got the gap at the top. They've shown that they've got this mental strength where they can score these late goals. They can keep going till the end of games. But at the same time, there's two sides to that coin. And there are some instances this season where they're switching off or they're not coming out strong enough and quick enough in matches. So, I mean, I don't know. I can really see that this Pepe injury could see them lose to Bayern Munich. I think they've got to be considered massive favourites, the Bundesliga side now. And maybe it might be better for Zidane to focus a little more on the league.
Well, that's interesting. I don't think many Los Blancos fans will be too happy, particularly the Presidente as well, saying that he wants to focus on the Champions League very much so this season, try and go back-to-back, which would be Simon going, obviously, against the grain of all of that, and saying that perhaps it should be the La Liga competition that Real Madrid should focus on. It will be tough without Pepe, but I think Nacho Fernandez and Sergio Ramos can put together something enough at the back to be able to at least hold off a Bayern attack that is all firing on all cylinders in the Bundesliga. But it's the Bundesliga where they're the only team really in it, and that one horse race continues across in Germany. What about Atletico Madrid? History at the Bernabeu, first club not to lose in four consecutive visits. Griezmann as well has been very vocal recently about possible move to Real Madrid, saying that it's not dead in his eyes, but the rivalry between the two sides probably makes it impossible. Which again, if you try to be cynical about those comments, you think he's saying, I'd quite like to go to Real Madrid. I like the idea of staying in Madrid and just hopping across. I hope that something can be done and that the animosity between the two local rivals isn't enough to prevent that. That's the way I see it anyway. Your thoughts, Ewan, on first the impressive result at the Bernabeu and going four consecutive games undefeated against Real Madrid at the Bernabeu.
Yeah, I think Griezmann's such an interesting case because I think one of the biggest takeaways from this game is that I think Griezmann is now the best player in Madrid. I mean, he was just awesome in that game, not just by scoring the goal, but he was everywhere. If you looked at like his average position for the game, his average position was actually in the centre circle. That's how deep he was dropping back to help, and he won the ball back eight times. I think six of those were in his own half. He had 13 passes in his own half as well. He was just, and Simeone commented on this after the game. He said, you know, he's so grateful to Griezmann for, you know, recognising how much talent he has, but still sacrificing himself for the team. And yeah, he just... with Fernando Torres being very quiet in this game, with Gamero out injured, all the onus was on Griezmann to make something happen, and he did. He had a few shots. He had that wonderful overhead kick, which was ultimately offside, but could have been a special moment. And yeah, he just kind of pulled Atletico towards a draw. And yeah, I think we can see him for several more Madrid derbies, some of them probably in an Atletico shirt. And yeah, his comments won't be taken too well by Atletico fans if he's suggesting that he'd be happy to move across the city. But at the same time, I think he might be having a bit of fun with all this transfer talk. He said he's committed to Atletico for the moment. He's happy at the moment, and I think he genuinely doesn't know where he wants to end up or what his actual options are. And some of the comments he's made, he's almost just fanning the flames a little bit, and I think he's enjoying the rumours. Kind of just, you know, he knows that people are going to talk about it anyway, so he might as well participate and just add something, get people talking. I don't know if he has his mind made up at all, but we'll soon find out. I'd find it really strange to see him moving to Real Madrid. I think he's become such a hero for Atletico fans that he wouldn't want to lose all of that. But then again, if he truly does love living in Madrid so much, then it would make sense.
How big is he compared to the other great forwards that have come through Atletico Madrid in terms of, you talk about how much the Atleti fans love Antoine Griezmann, but is he as big as Aguero was, as Torres was in his first stint there, as Diego Costa was, as Falcao was, or is he even bigger and more beloved than those iconic names, Simon?
Well, I mean, it's tough to say. I mean, I think if you ask that question again at the end of this season, if they can pull off some kind of Champions League win, then I think the balance will definitely swing a lot more in his favour. I mean, he's such a complete player. That's the thing. He hasn't got the frame of Diego Costa, but he's still got that kind of bullish approach to him. I think the real striking thing about him is that he can really do anything well. I mean, just because he's quite a diminutive presence on the field, he's still not bad with his head at all. He can offer so much. He's quite selfless. He's obviously got a big personality on and off the pitch. And I mean, hopefully he can stay at Atletico for one more season, because I want to see what the club can do, you know, in the new stadium. I think Simeone will stay for one more year. And I think that Griezmann kind of owes it to Simeone for everything that he's done, for bringing him out and, you know, giving him the foundations to build upon, to the point where I think he's probably in the top, you know, top two players playing in the Liga at the moment. He really owes it to Simeone to stick it around for one more year, I would say. But yeah, I mean, if they were to do something special, get to the Champions League final, maybe even win it. I mean, when you look at the teams that are still in that competition, you would say that they are the team most likely, you know, you would say they were the favourites to definitely be in the next round when it comes to the next draw. He could definitely, you know, etch his name in the Atletico history books for a long, long while if they can pull something off like that this season.
Counting out Leicester City already. We'll come to that in the Champions League bit in just a moment. We're going to take a very quick break, though. Cheers very much for breaking down the Madrid derby, gentlemen. We're going to have this quick break, and when we come back, we'll be looking elsewhere around the league, particularly at Eibar and Celta Vigo, before a little bit of Champions League discussion as well. All that and more coming up on Eye on the League. Welcome back. Marker in English is on Twitter, @MarkerInEnglish, for all the breaking news and reviews from around the world of Spanish football and Spanish sport in general. And of course, you can get on www.marker.com/EN, www.marker.com/EN. Simon and Ewan can be found there, and they're joining me on the podcast today. We're going to take a quick rundown of some of the other stories coming out of La Liga from the weekend. And Ewan, I think it's only fitting we start with you really on this one, because Eibar in the European places now. We had a quick chat off air before we started recording today about this and what it would mean perhaps to a club like Eibar to be able to get into the Europa League. They're sat in sixth place in the La Liga table at the moment. An incredible achievement for this, I think it's fair to say, diminutive side in Spanish football that have surprised a lot of people this season.
Yeah, I mean, this is a club that the former president said their natural place is in the third division, and, you know, a town of 27,000 people, they have no right to really be in La Liga, never mind in sixth place. So this is just the latest achievement in many over the past years. And yeah, as we were saying, if they could even just get one European match to put in their history books, it would just be something special for the club. This is a team that, when they played Real Madrid a couple of years ago, that was the first time they'd ever played them. So to get a European game would just be something special. And they have a really good shot. They defeated Celta Vigo, admittedly arrested Celta Vigo side ahead of their own European game this weekend, but they defeated them away from home 2-0. They also beat Villarreal last weekend, beat Las Palmas at home. They seem unstoppable at the moment, and it's going to be really interesting to see this fight for the last for sixth place and maybe seventh as well, if that becomes a place, because it's a very Basque fight. We don't know who's going to get European football, but it's going to be coming to the Basque country, because Eibar, Athletic and Real Sociedad are the teams fighting to get that sixth spot. And then the only reason that seventh place would become a European spot as well is if their Basque neighbour Alaves lose the cup final. But if they win the cup final, then they would get that European ticket. So it's going to be a very interesting one, and Eibar play Athletic at home in a couple of weeks, and that's going to be a very it's always a special game, that one, but it's going to be a pretty important one as well.
Yeah, and the Estadio Municipal de Imbruglia, and I apologise for destroying that name for you there, Ewan, will be rocking on the Monday night when they take on Athletic Club Bilbao. They still have to go to Atletico Madrid and Barcelona as well in the latter part of the season. In terms of mental fortitude for a side, though, unprepared to perhaps be in this position, it's a big task for Mendilibar to keep his players kind of settled on the ground and focused on the job in hand, because it is such a big opportunity for them, and it's a position they're not entirely used to being in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, I mean, I think the striking thing with Eibar is just that they play as such a solid unit, such a solid team. They've got the way that they want to play, and they aren't really willing to sacrifice that depending on which opponents they really face. I mean, maybe it would be, as you say, a benefit that they're not really too familiar with the situation. You know, you've got that sort of almost naivety which doesn't pile the pressure on. And I think they do have the fact that no one expects them to get European football might work in their favour. I mean, you look at Real Sociedad, obviously they've dropped off considerably in recent weeks. Athletic Club, they're, you know, they tend to, you know, sneak in and reach the expectations which everyone would, you know, expect at the very, very start of the season. But it is interesting. I mean, Eibar, they're not frightened of any team that they'll go to. Their away form has been a lot better this season. They're always willing to score goals. I mean, they've scored in each of their last five. They've got multiple goal scorers. They're not just reliant on one man, which, you know, I think Real Sociedad, they obviously have William Jose, and then Juanmi stepped in. But the goals aren't coming from all the way across, you know, their front line and midfield. But with Eibar, you know, you've got Pedro Leon, who's been, you know, scored double figures. You've got Adrian. I mean, he's obviously a lot from the penalty spot, but he's still chipped in with quite a lot of goals. And then you've got Sergei Enrich. Even Bebe on the weekend scoring when he's, you know, one of the more erratic players that they've got at their disposal. And of course, Kike Garcia deserves a mention with his fantastic record in recent weeks. I mean, he must have scored 6 in 7, something like that now. And the fact that they've got all of these options, all of them scoring, it really does open it up for them to potentially, you know, be the favourites for that sixth spot, because Athletic Club, their away form has only picked up very, very recently. And this naivety and the goals and the high pressing line, it's things which teams, you know, you'd expect, you know, teams like Real Madrid or whoever is, you know, in the upper reach of the table, you'd expect them to play teams such as Eibar, who are such a small club. You'd expect Eibar, you know, shut up shop, look to keep things tight, but that isn't necessarily the case at all. You know, they're willing to get in anyone's face, and that could really stand them in good stead to, you know, cause a few more upsets before now and the end of the year.
Let's rattle around some of the other talking points from around La Liga. What about Celta Vigo? Discussions of perhaps moving the club out of Vigo, which would be a very interesting turn of events indeed. Carlos Mourinho, the club president, saying he wants to move it away. Unusual to see sides moving away from their traditional home, although changing ground isn't that new, of course. But taking the club out of the city, maybe just further away from the centre of Vigo. I mean, does that change much? We've seen sides now start to move away, kind of like the American franchises do in England, with Wimbledon, for instance, moving up to Milton Keynes to become MK Dons. You don't see anything like that happen. Does it seem almost unprecedented, this move?
I mean, I would say it kind of, you know, it's a continuation of what happened with the match being cancelled due to bad weather. The stadium's not in good condition. I would suggest that probably the owner would have been prepared to, you know, foot the bill for the correct work to be done, but it was left to the Vigo council instead. It's just one of those where, you know, you see a team like Celta Vigo, that they're in European competition quite regularly, and they're a club which probably needs to, you know, take the next step. But it is quite limiting when you've got the city, you know, telling the club that they're willing to, you know, lease the stadium for a certain amount of time, as opposed to the club itself having, you know, the control over it and the control over, you know, their own logistics and everything like that. So the owner, he's saying that he's willing to, you know, put about, I think it's about €70 million or something into building a new training facility and a new stadium outside of the city. And obviously, logistically for fans, that might not be the best option. But in terms of having the control that you might need as an owner, and the guarantee that when there's this bad weather, that it's not going to, you know, cause disruptions in the La Liga calendar for Celta Vigo and other clubs as well. It seems like it might be a good idea. I mean, it's obviously a big claim to be made. It might just be the owner making, you know, kicking up a big fuss because he wants the current situation to kind of be overturned and stacked more in his favour. But it's definitely not out of the question that this would be a good forward-thinking step for the club for years to come, I think.
But does that not lose them their edge of being kind of Celta Vigo? If you take them out of the city, put them elsewhere, you almost lose that bond between the city and the fan and the club, if you will, that kind of trifecta.
I was just going to say, you can look at with Atletico Madrid, they're doing the same thing, and I think it's getting to the stage in football in general where teams and their owners are kind of looking, you know, we need to keep scaling things up to get, you know, the revenue coming in, keep everything, you know, at the top of the game. But also in Spain, with the problems with the weather, there are a lot of stadiums which do need some work. And if the council aren't prepared to put the money in, I mean, you're just going to have a lot of stadiums falling into disrepair. So, I mean, practically, it might be the better option.
Fair enough. How about Osasuna finally, down at the bottom of the La Liga table? 2 wins in 2, but still way off the any point of being safe at the moment. And really, when you look at the La Liga table right now in that relegation battle, the only side that you can see coming out of that bottom three or so is Sporting Gijón, as they look to pull themselves away from the foot of the table, perhaps just try and close the gap on Leganes, who play obviously on Monday night this week. Gijón, Osasuna have left it too little too late, and they almost had that purple patch about a month and a half ago, which was really their time to try and capitalise on opportunities that they weren't able to pick up wins, picking up too many draws instead. There's no chance for them to get out of it now, is there?
I really don't think so. Yeah, like you say, it's too little, too late. They hadn't won since October, which I think was a stretch of 21 league games without a win, and then they've won twice in 4 days. But against Alaves, they were very fortunate. Against Leganes, I mean, it was a good win. But yeah, it's just a bit too little, too late. They're still 10 points adrift, and like you say, I think Sporting, if anyone is going to get out of it, they have the best chance. And I suppose I wouldn't rule out Granada as well. I think we've said this on this podcast before, that they're the Spanish Sunderland, and they always seem to pull off a great escape. So just a couple of years ago, I think it was, Granada looked completely out of it, and they won. I think they got 9 points out of their last 4 games. So yeah, it's very possible for Granada. And Leganes, having lost this weekend, that was a really sore loss for them, I think. Leganes seem very, very inconsistent, and if anyone could drop into it, they could. And Deportivo, obviously, as well. They're just 1 point further ahead. So I think any one of Deportivo, Leganes, Sporting and Granada could still fall into it, but it certainly wouldn't be a surprise if it finishes up as it stands right now.
Interesting to see that Osasuna now completely dead and buried, but you're still giving a little bit of hope to Granada. That
they always do it. They always do it.
Time is running out, though. Really is running out in terms of that La Liga survival race. Anybody really, I think, above Deportivo? Only Leganes, I think, could fall into that trap. I know there's only a point between Deportivo and Leganes, but yeah, I do think it's only Leganes and Gijón, the two sides, going to be battling for survival come the end of this campaign. Gentlemen, we are recording this on a Monday, of course. Tuesday and Wednesday are, of course, Champions League action coming your way. And I kind of want to start off with the game that's almost the simplest of the three right now. Real Madrid against Bayern Munich over two legs is going to be a feisty affair. These two sides seem to meet each other every single season in the Champions League. These fixtures, much like Barcelona against Paris Saint-Germain, just always seem to crop up. In terms of the first leg in Munich, Real Madrid are going to have a very tough task indeed. We touched on the fact that Pepe isn't going to be available for them, but Zidane's side know how to get a job done against the Germans at times. Let's start with you, Simon. I know you were saying it's going to be very tough without Pepe, but Nacho and Sergio Ramos have enough experience, I think, together to be able to perhaps not shut out Lewandowski and co, but at least keep them at bay and keep them in with a chance, that's for sure. Is it all going to be a little too much, though, do you think, in terms of the injuries and whatnot in that Madrid side as they take on Bayern Munich this week?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just finding it hard to... I really hope that, you know, when it comes to the second leg at the Bernabeu, that they've got a chance to, you know, either turn things around or to get a result that favours them. Because the away leg coming up first, it does look tough. I mean, not having Pepe, not having Varane. I mean, not only does it mean that you're going to have Nacho playing with Sergio Ramos, but it also denies Zidane that flexibility. In some of the bigger games, he's gone 3-5-2, and he doesn't even have the personnel to, you know, revert to that, to, you know, protect a lead. It is tough to see how Bayern Munich don't have the upper hand across this tie. I think they've obviously got a lot of options which are extremely good going forward, and this injury's come at a really, really bad time. I mean, if you were looking at Pepe and Varane being fit, so Zidane's got a full defensive complement to choose from, then I think it's, you know, 50-50, either team can take it over the two legs. But it's going to be... I think the first leg will define this one, because Bayern Munich, they'll be looking at the fact that they're going to be playing against Sergio Ramos and Nacho. And I think you look at Sergio Ramos and you obviously see a great leader. You see a real threat from set pieces, and he really embodies everything that Madrid stands for. But that's not to say that he can't be rash, and it's not to say that he can't make some mistakes. And it's a huge, huge game for Nacho. There's a lot of pressure going to be put on his shoulders. So, I mean, I would say that Carlo Ancelotti's men, that they've really got to be throwing the kitchen sink at Madrid and thinking maybe we can even make our trip to the Bernabeu mean almost nothing. Maybe they could put a few goals past them and really, you know, leave Zidane's men in a really tough spot heading into that second leg. It's going to be interesting. I'm obviously not saying that Real Madrid are 100% down and out, but they've really got to be careful how they approach the first leg, because they could really be done some serious damage before they've even really got a chance to, you know, show what they can do in front of their own fans.
Zidane made his name as a manager for Real Madrid immediately in the Champions League, and obviously inexperienced compared to somebody like Carlo Ancelotti as a manager in these big games, but has been very successful almost immediately in his career with these sorts of evenings. Ancelotti is one of the best managers on the planet, arguably. And has changed things at Bayern Munich enough to keep it alive and fresh after it went slightly stale under Pep Guardiola. And I don't think there's too many people that miss Guardiola in Munich, that's for sure. In terms of that experience of two managers taking on each other, is there almost like the young and the old kind of setup on this one against Zidane, against Ancelotti in this one, Ewan?
Yeah, that's going to be one of the main talking points. The master takes on the apprentice, and as we all know from Star Wars, that maybe goes in Real Madrid's favour. So, that's an interesting subplot. But I think almost what we were talking about earlier with the sort of naivety of Ibar having almost been inexperienced in the sense, Zidane, I think that benefited him last year, where there wasn't really that much pressure on him. Real Madrid were in a tough spot when he came in to take over from Benitez, and there really wasn't much pressure on him to win that Champions League. But then just last night, Florentino Perez is saying that it's Real Madrid's priority, so all of a sudden there is pressure on Zidane's shoulders, and you just wonder how that's going to play into his decisions. Obviously in defence, the decision's kind of made for him because he doesn't have that many players. But yeah, it's an interesting one. I think Ancelotti will know how to approach these sort of games. He's done it time and time again. It's just two big hitters, and I disagree with Simon in the sense I think they really will come down to the game at the Bernabeu, and Real Madrid have done this so many times there. I mean, they've scored in the last 52 matches in all competitions, so I can see them getting an away goal, and even just one away goal, even if they lose 3-1 or something like that, then the tie is still very much alive for Real Madrid. But yeah, I think Bayern Munich are probably favourites in the tie, but I think there will still be something to play for when they come back to Spain.
Well, that all takes place on Wednesday evening, Real Madrid's trip to Munich. We have, of course, this is my favourite encounter in the Champions League at the moment. This is a really interesting one for me. Barcelona have to make the trip first to Turin to take on Juventus. Juventus, the old lady of Italian football, but breathing new life into Italian football and its reputation around Europe with Higuain just having an incredible season. And there's certainly a storyline in Higuain, the former Real Madrid man, perhaps pouncing on a weakened Barcelona side to be able to take the first steps to putting them out of the Champions League to cap off what would be a miserable month or so for the Catalan club if it doesn't go well in Italy on Tuesday. Again, it's two sides that know each other reasonably well. Of course, they had the Champions League final 2 years ago against each other. But this is a different Juventus side. It may have lost somebody like Paul Pogba, but the quality defensively is still in there. Pjanic has fitted in very well into that Pogba role, if you will, in the heart of the midfield. Barcelona, as we've mentioned, are going to be missing some key players for this game as well.
Yeah, one of those is going to be Busquets, which I think is just going to be massive. I mean, Busquets, he's been inconsistent this season, but when he has played well, as he has done in some of the bigger games, he's really made Barcelona tick. So I think that's going to be, as vital as missing Piqué was in Malaga, I think missing Busquets could be huge in this one.
Yeah, I mean, I would say you can kind of almost bill this one as the MSN against, what is it, a different kind of BBC, I suppose, isn't it? But you've got a team where it's almost unstoppable force meets a movable object, I think, this one. You've got Allegri, who obviously knows tactically he's very, very good, and I think that he'll already be thinking that with Busquets not playing a role, there will be something that he's going to look to do to combat that. And obviously, he can react a lot in-game to what Luis Enrique will be doing to, you know, accommodate for the fact that Busquets won't be there. But as well as having, you know, that this really good rearguard action, you've got Higuain, you've got Dybala and all these players who have been chipping in with goals this season. It's one of those where I think Allegri's game management is something which Luis Enrique needs to aspire to, that kind of level. And I think on a managerial level, Juventus have got to be going into this knowing that Allegri, I think, will make the right decisions at the right times, pick the right teams. Whereas with Barcelona, that's kind of been the underlying issue for a few weeks. Barcelona, obviously, you can never count them out of anything. We learned that against PSG. But you look at the away leg in Italy, in Turin, and that is going to be a very, very tough game. That will obviously shape how things go going back to the Camp Nou. I don't think that Barcelona can afford to, you know, really slip up in the first leg and then score more than five goals in the second against Juventus. I really don't think that Allegri would ever let that happen. But yeah, I mean, it is going to be a big test because Barcelona, they struggled to break down Malaga, and Malaga having got the same central defensive qualities that Juventus can boast. So, but at the same time, you can look at the fact that Juventus recently, they've kind of struggled against Napoli in the last two games where they've played against Sarri. They've not managed to pick up a win. So maybe Luis Enrique can be looking through the tapes from those games to maybe pinpoint a few weaknesses where he can be using, you know, his MSN to exploit the gaps wherever they may be in the Bianconeri's back line.
The interesting thing is how good they are on home soil as well, Juventus. Only one team since April 2015 has scored two goals or more on Juventus at the Stadio Juventus, as it's now called, the former Dele Alpi that was renovated, and that was Atalanta earlier this year. An incredible run. They're so tough to break down on home soil. What's the best result that Barcelona... I mean, do you think that they need an away goal to take back to the Camp Nou in this fixture, or will they be happy just trying to shut down this Juventus attack?
Yeah, I think the reason I think the PSG comeback seemed so impossible was because they didn't have an away goal. Even at 5-1 versus 4-0, just it sort of gives a different slant on the game. It shows that they have what it takes to score against against the opponent. Whereas in Paris, Barcelona just didn't look like scoring at all. And if they can score one goal in Juventus, even if they lose by one or two goals, even if they come back with the sort of 3-1 result we're talking about with the Bayern Munich game, I think any of the big Spanish teams like Real Madrid, Barcelona can win 2-0 at home against any team in the world. So yeah, if they can get an away goal, even if they lose 3-1, 4-1, I think would be a bit too much. But if they can come out of this losing by the odd goal or, you know, a 3-1 defeat that gives them a chance. And yeah, as Simon said, if they can beat PSG 6-1, then we can't really rule anything out, can we?
And what about Dani Alves taking on his former club? And there's been some calls this week that he's one of the big reasons why Barcelona struggled this year, was so good at right back, departing the club though and going to Juventus, and has settled him really nicely there as well, popped up with a goal in the Champions League against Porto in that first leg. It'll be an interesting night for him, because he's been openly critical as well about the club recently, about Barcelona recently. It's taking on his former side, and initially we thought it was quite a mutual kind of departing of the ways and it was all nice and friendly, and in the last couple of months or so it hasn't quite been that amicable.
Well, against Sporting Gijón a few weeks ago, the only Barcelona right back on the pitch was Douglas, and he was playing against Barcelona. And it's going to be a similar thing in this game. The only really right back on the pitch is going to be Dani Alves, and yeah, I bet Luis Enrique wishes he was filling in on his side, because, as you mentioned, he's been the right back spot has been the source of so many of Barcelona's problems this season. And the fact that Dani Alves has been playing almost just as well as he had been last year, it definitely looks like they let him go a bit too soon.
Yeah, I mean, I would be saying that one of the big talking points as well will be the formation that Luis Enrique goes with. Is it going to be this 3-4-3, which he seems to have adopted for the bigger games? Or, I mean, I thought Jordi Alba was quite good against Malaga, and I think he's been quite unfortunate to be out of the side recently. So would they perhaps, you know, go with a 4-3-3? It definitely is with Dani Alves. He's the biggest miss for them this season, I'd say. A lot of people last summer would have been thinking, well, it's the right time to say goodbye, it's the right time, it's coming to the end of an era. I think they were maybe thinking that he would be going to Juventus to, you know, play a bit part role, but he's proved that he's going to be a real threat when they come up against Juventus this week. And also on the opposite side, you've got Alexandro, who's a wonderful player too. So it's definitely going to ask a lot from Barcelona's wide defensive options, whether that's in a back three or a back four. And they've really got to be wary of the overlap, because if there's one thing they do know, it's that Dani Alves can put in a fantastic ball, and Gonzalo Higuain, which they'll know from when they've played against Real Madrid in the past, has got the movement in the box to find that little inch which will make probably the game-defining difference.
Gentlemen, finally in the Champions League this week, Atletico Madrid against Leicester City, excuse me. This game is the game that I think some people are billing as could just be an absolute car crash, in terms of nobody knows what's really going to happen, but it's probably going to be quite explosive and aggressive when it does all kick off in midweek. Are Leicester going to be underestimated by this Atletico Madrid side? I mean, they made footballing kind of news throughout the world with what they did last season with winning the Premier League, of course, and it's been well reported how they've improved under Craig Shakespeare since Claudio Ranieri left, losing their first game under the new manager on the weekend against Everton, but plenty of players rested, of course, going into this fixture in midweek. Atletico Madrid don't want to underestimate Leicester City as they welcome them to the Calderon this week, but at the same time, they want to make sure they get a job done and dusted and don't leave any doubt, which is something that Sevilla couldn't do.
Yeah, Simeone's been quite open about the comparisons between the teams, about the way Leicester play and their sort of success has been similar to Atletico's in 2013-14. So he seems very, very much aware of what Leicester can do, how they're similar to Atletico, and he even said that at the time of the draw, I mean, everybody underestimated Atletico in 2013-14, and they reached the final, and nobody wants to do the same with Leicester. So I think if there's one team in the draw that Leicester could have got which aren't going to underestimate them, it's Atletico Madrid, because they were Leicester a few years ago. They were the Spanish Leicester before Leicester were the English Leicester. So yeah, I think Simeone is going to be well prepared for this one, and they're just going to have to try and put the game to bed. But I really think this one's going to go right down to the final minute in England. I think I can picture this one being a couple of 0-0s and decided on penalties.
Simon, is Jamie Vardy going to have a party at all against an Atletico Madrid defence that hasn't perhaps been at its best at times this season for Simeone? I mean, there have been a lot more weaknesses in this Atletico Madrid side than many expected, particularly some members of the podcast at the beginning of this season, Ewan. And yeah, it's certainly a side that isn't infallible, but they have the experience. And we spoke about naivety in the Champions League can help, but at this stage for players, as a core group of players, that experience has got to pay dividends.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that I think Diego Godin is probably going to be the party pooper on this one. They've obviously got Jan Oblak. He's been back for a few weeks. He's absolutely vital. And I'd say the one big striking difference, I mean, you can say that they've got a similar style of play, but I would say that with Leicester, you know, they can't really change too much. They're kind of quite one-dimensional, you know, the way that they're going to play. The only real thing that they can offer differently is whether they go with Islam Slimani and have, you know, a big imposing player up front, or whether they go for Vardy where he can use his pace to get in behind. And I think that Simeone will be very aware of, you know, leaving too much space in behind for Vardy and other pacey options to, you know, have a bit of space, have some areas to run into. I would say with Atletico, it'd be doing them a bit of a disservice to say that they are really very similar to Leicester. I think they've got a lot more options than Leicester have got. They can change up the way they play. They can offer various different systems, I would say. And the one thing that we do know is both of these teams can dig deep. Both of these teams can overachieve. And for me, I'm going to say that out of the tyres, I'd say that this is one of the more certain ones. And I mean, I'm happy to be proven wrong by Leicester, you know, being the wonderful underdogs that they can be. But I would say with Atletico playing the way that they've been playing, earlier in the season, I was thinking that, you know, things were stale, that maybe Simeone would be thinking about leaving. But now I think Simeone will probably already be thinking that he wants to be looking ahead to next season. They've been absolutely brilliant. Antoine Griezmann has been unplayable. And I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing how, you know, the likes of Robert Huth, Wes Morgan, Ben Aluane, how they're going to deal with Antoine Griezmann without absolutely kicking him into orbit. So I just can't see anything other than Diego Simeone's men getting through into the next round yet again and just keep that run going of, you know, getting to Champions League semi-finals.
Ewan predicts it being close. Simon says that it's going to be fairly straightforward, really, for Atletico Madrid. We will find out as the next few weeks continue. Gentlemen, it's been a long one today, so I appreciate the time. We will try and cut this down perhaps in the edit, but thanks very much for joining us on the show today.
No problem, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been good to be back. It's been a few weeks, but a long time coming. I think we, you know, put in a good performance after resting up. And Ewan just keeps bringing this new energy every week that Abel win another game.
There's no FIFA virus in this podcast.
we will leave it on that. Gents, thanks very much as always. Remember to get onto marca.com/EN, marca.com/EN for all the breaking news and views from around the world of Spanish football and Spanish sport in general. Could be a very good week if results go the right way for the sides in the Champions League from Spain, and if Real Madrid can get a result in Germany, Barcelona get a result in Italy, and Atletico Madrid can do the business on home soil against Leicester City and add to a fantastic week after Sergio Garcia's Masters win. Spanish sport looking very strong indeed on the pages of marca.com/EN. You can also follow us on Twitter @MarcaInEnglish. We may be back on Thursday depending on what happens in the Champions League. We will be back in at least 7 days' time to take a look back at the next weekend of fixtures from La Liga. Until then, enjoy the football, stay safe, take care, and we'll be back very soon indeed. Have a good one.